Insurance policies need audits and reviews too. Wait a minute, what? Here's a list of potential legal documents and contracts that need to be updated and reviewed on a regular basis. Wills, trusts, personal insurance, business insurance, investment accounts, retirement accounts, and there's more, I'm sure. I could go on, but here's the point. Make sure you add life insurance contracts to this list. Why? The list is extensive and it will all make sense. And be clear, we're not talking about anything close to buy insurance, life insurance and hold it. From the home base in Brookfield, Wisconsin, welcome to the latest episode of Inside Connect and Simplify, sponsored by the benefit companies. Roger here, human capital management consultant, marketing guy, and your host for this podcast, where we dig into life insurance as an investment opportunity, as a safety net, as a business solution, as a tax strategy, as a retirement vehicle. We may go even farther than that. And who better to educate all of us on life insurance and why it needs to be audited and reviewed, just like all your other legal contracts, than our partner and industry veteran, Marty Dooley. Marty is the founding principal of Highland Capital Brokerage based in Elm Grove, Wisconsin. And notice the company name is Highland Capital Brokerage, not Highland Capital Life Insurance, because Marty does so much more than just life insurance. Marty, welcome back. Thanks for being here. So why does life insurance need to be reviewed on a regular basis like all your other contracts and documents?
Well, first off, let me say thanks for having me back. Life insurance needs to be reviewed because simply things change. People's needs change, products change, and the performance of the products that they have in place change over time and need to be reviewed on a regular basis.
Simple enough. So give me a couple of those changes. What are some of the biggest things that change on a yearly or 5-year or 10-year window?
So if we go through that list that I just provided you, consumers' needs change. The 35-year-old that bought life insurance when they were young, just got married, just had kids, bought a new house, had a big mortgage, had a lot of debt, that individual's needs are very different from that same person when they're in their late 50s, early 60s, as it relates to the type of financial protection they need. In the 35 years that I've been in the business, I've seen numerous product changes that benefit the consumer. Products with new riders, new bells and whistles that make the product more beneficial and are directed more toward people's objectives than they were in the past. And third is, and the reason why I think that policy reviews are important, because we're talking about policies that are already in place, is that the performance on those policies may have gone sideways, particularly in the last decade when interest rates were low. And those policies are not going to perform up to the original expectations that they were purchased off of.
Right, so you made an interesting point. I was going to ask about interest rates anyway. So I know that when you purchase a particular life insurance policy, they'll have a built-in interest rate that there's going to be a return on that's going to help grow the cash value inside the policy. Now we're getting way into the weeds. I get that. But you know, so I buy it 10 years ago, and that interest rate stays the same, or does it change over the next 10 years? Talk about how that works.
So cash value life insurance that are tied to fixed interest rates move with the interest rate market. So In the 35 years that I've been in this business, I've seen interest rates from the mid-80s do nothing but fall. Policies back in the mid-80s were crediting interest rates in the double digits, 12, 14%. And over the course of the last three decades, we've watched the interest rate market slide to where it was essentially zero just about a year and a half ago. Those interest rate changes impact the policy performance because the insurance companies are going to credit based off of a variable interest rate. So someone who bought a policy, say back in the mid-90s, with a projected interest rate of 8%, might have seen that interest rate fall to half that, 4%, over the course of the last 15 to 20 years. that's impacted the performance and the longevity and the sustainability of that policy over time.
That makes sense to me. So that in itself is a reason to take a look at it and review to make sure where the performance is at. I get that. Besides interest rates, what other things impact the performance of a life insurance policy?
The majority of the policies that you'll see out in the marketplace are tied to fixed interest rates. But there are other policies out there, variable life, that's tied to the stock market, the performance of the stock market. Index policies, which are tied directly to some type of equity indices like the S&P or the Hang Seng or the Euro stock. So fluctuations in any of those markets, whether it's interest rates, the stock market, the bond market, etc., ultimately impact the performance of the policy because the insurance companies that are backing those policies are using those vehicles to generate interest for themselves, which then goes back and gets credited to the policies.
Okay, so we're not getting off track, but we are talking about some of the things that impact a policy, which again is a reason to have a review or an audit. So we're bringing this around to saying these are reasons why you need to do this.
Correct. And the interest rate issue is probably the biggest thing over the last 20 years because, one, it's been a long, low interest rate environment. And again, because most people who bought policies, even as recently as 10 years ago, bought those policies under the assumption that it was going to perform off of an interest crediting rate that was higher than they actually received. That's not because the insurance company is cheating them. It's simply because the interest rate environment has dropped. And with that goes the policy performance.
That makes sense to me. Okay, so we're talking about an audit. And again, as you already mentioned, things change, whether that's the person's life or it's the products that are available. Yeah, those things change all the time. What is it that you would say to folks when they say, okay, I have this in place. Why do I need an audit? We're kind of getting there, but how often do I have to do that? What are you going to find when you look at this? Kind of talk about what you're looking for to come back to somebody and say, hey, this is what I'm seeing. And maybe consider this. Go there if you could.
So most people, when they purchase life insurance, they're doing so off of what's referred to as an illustration, make some assumptions on how that policy is going to perform going forward. As I'd stated before, if you bought a policy in the last 10, 20, 30 years, the assumptions that were baked into that policy as it relates to the performance were overstated. As interest rates came down, the policies were affected, and the cash value, which essentially supports the policy long term, is lower than one would have anticipated. So you need to keep your eye on that, because a policy that was built with, say, an 8% interest rate assumption that's only being credited with 4% interest currently isn't going to last as long as it had originally been intended.
That makes sense to me. So what's the recommendation? Look at it every year, every couple of years? I mean, it's probably different for everybody.
Yeah, I don't know that you need to be looking at the policies on an annual basis, but I would certainly put it in a tickler to look at it at least every 3 to 5 years. And I would tell you that age is a factor as it relates to how frequently you need to do a policy review. The younger you are, probably the less frequent it needs to be done. The older you are, the more frequently it needs to be done, primarily because there are higher mortality charges in the contract in later years, and the policy becomes much more unstable in those later years as it would for someone who's younger.
So it's interesting you bring that up. I mean, when you talked about mortality rates, I'm going to go to a sidebar thing that we had talked about offline. And that was, I've seen recently, and I don't know much about it, even though I'm a licensed agent here in the state, I really don't know this much, But I've heard about third parties buying life insurance policies, giving the insured cash now, and buying the life policy off of them. Am I hearing that right? What does that mean?
You are. It's referred to as the life settlement market, and it's essentially a third-party institutional market that will purchase unwanted, unneeded life insurance from current policyholders.
So you say unwanted or unneeded. So is this really driven by folks who really don't have any need for it, or is it driven by folks who actually need cash in their hand today, and this might be a way to do it? I'm not sure I understand that.
I would tell you that it's a little bit of both. Okay. I think that more than anything else, we see people who had purchased life insurance, kind of as we had stated early off, they bought it to address a certain need back when they were younger. They've aged now. Their situation's changed. They look at a life insurance policy that they hold, and they say, I don't need that policy for that reason anymore. Now, they could take that policy and plug that policy into another need that they have, but oftentimes they don't have another need for life insurance. And so they'll take the policy to the secondary market to get a valuation and to see if an institutional buyer will offer them more money for the policy than the insurance company will offer in the form of a cash surrender value.
That makes sense to me now. So thanks for explaining that, because I new information. And it's just fairly new thought process, isn't it? I mean, it hasn't been around for 50 years.
No, it's been around for about 30-ish years. I would say it was kind of the mid-90s. And interestingly enough, it developed out in California as part of the AIDS epidemic, where you had policyholders that didn't have beneficial interests and didn't have need for the life insurance, were looking for cash to try experimental drugs or possibly vacation, you know, with the remaining time that they had. And so they were selling life insurance policies for 25 to 50 cents on the dollar. That's now morphed into something different, where that was a situation where individuals had real short life expectancies, 12 to 24 months. The market's now blown up into institutional buyers looking at things as far out as 15 to 20 years for maturity. And by maturity, I mean death. They're looking at these policies as essentially mortality bonds.
Okay, so one of the other questions I think I always want to know is, what's the impact? Well, let's talk about life insurance and taxation. Talk about that.
So there's really two parts of that. One is, how is life insurance taxed? And death benefits on life insurance are tax-free, always have been, and I believe will continue to be, because the life insurance tax lobby is so strong out in D.C. In addition to that, you have tax deferred accumulation within a cash value policy. So any earnings, any crediting that's taking place within a cash value life insurance policy is a non-taxable event. Your cash is growing tax-free within that policy. As you take money out of a policy, you're allowed to take your premium basis, that's what you put into the policy, out of the policy without any tax. So you get your basis, your premium basis, back without any tax. If someone's going to exceed their premium basis on a withdrawal of their cash value, they'll typically switch to a policy loan. Policy loans within life insurance policies are also tax-free. Those tax laws that apply to life insurance have not really changed in decades. Actually, under a revenue code 7702, which has been with us for decades. However, your question on taxes is interesting as it relates to this topic about policy audits, because other tax changes have huge implications to the life insurance market. The most obvious is the changes that we've seen occur with the estate taxes over the last 20 years. About two decades ago, people's estates were taxed from an estate tax perspective when they exceeded about $1.2 million for a couple. Today, that's up to about $24 million. So the person that bought life insurance because they had an estate that was about $5 million and wanted to address their estate tax liability with a life insurance policy, they no longer need that policy in today's tax environment. However, in 2026, the estate tax laws are changing again, and that $24 million, what's known as a lifetime exemption, your ability to transfer $24 million without estate taxes, is going to be cut in half down to about $12 million. There'll be some indexing for inflation that will bring that number up, but it's going to affect people in that $10 to $20 million net worth range to a large extent.
So yeah, obviously there's planning involved. So it's just writing a policy. Get that. So absolutely, taxes are a big deal. I got a couple more thoughts that I want to hit on before we kind of wrap this thing up. But the goal, I think, of this was to outline, yeah, there's a ton of things that you need to consider, and just buying a policy and leaving it lay is not the answer. It needs to be reviewed. So go back to the audit process for you. If you're meeting with somebody and they have life insurance policies that you haven't seen yet, what is your process to review that policy and their overall picture? How do you do it? What do you do?
So two things that we ask people to provide us with is, one, the most recent policy anniversary statement. Any life insurance policy that you own, the insurance company will, at the end of a policy year, produce an annual report of all that's happened internally on that policy over the course of the last 12 months. So that shows us what's taken place over the past. And then we marry that up with what's known as an in-force ledger. So that's essentially an illustration, like the one that you use to buy the policy with. However, it's current, and it's taking a view of that policy going forward under the new set of assumptions that the policy's operating under.
Like interest rates, et cetera.
Correct.
Okay, gotcha. So I think the other thing that I personally have experience with, and we should talk about for a minute as part of the process of writing new information or new policies, would be the underwriting process. And the underwriting process not only impacts, let me put it this way, the underwriting process talks about not only the health of the people and the age and et cetera, those factors, but it also talks about, do they qualify for a $10 million policy if their annual income is well below that? Things like that. So talk about, if you could, the financial need part of the underwriting process as well as the health side of that, because they're both parts of the equation.
You're absolutely correct. There are two very different parts of the process. The medical underwriting process has really gotten very automated over the course of the last 2 to 3 years. I think COVID really pushed that process forward in a great way, to a point where today somebody under the age of 60 years old and someone that's buying, say, $3 million or less of insurance can most likely find a underwriting process that at least starts on an automated basis. And by that I mean the insurance company, after submitting an online application with just general information, name, rank, serial number, social security, who's going to be your beneficiary, who's going to own the policy, etc., they'll do what they refer to as a personal history interview. What doctors have you seen? Why? What medications are you on? Etc., etc. They'll take that information and they'll marry that information up with an incredible amount of information that they can pull off the internet. Things like your motor vehicle report, things like script checks that list any type of prescription that you've been given in the course of the last 10 years. They can pull what they refer to as electronic health records off the internet. So they can do a lot of the underwriting, or I should say the information gathering, can be done electronically without an invasive process to the insured. Where that goes from there is really based off of a computer algorithm for the most part. All this data is pushed through a computer algorithm The computer makes an initial decision. Can we offer coverage, and can we offer it at what price? I would say somewhere in the neighborhood of a half to two-thirds of the policies will go through that process without any invasive testing on the part of the insured. And it depends on age and amount. However, there is a subset of people that they will come back to and they'll say, we're not able to gather enough information through our electronic means or through our interview with you. We do need you to go back to what I would call old school underwriting, which is send an examiner out to your house, ask a bunch of medical questions, draw blood, get a urine sample, take physical measurements, blood pressure, height, weight, etc., analyze that, and make an underwriting decision off of that. So that's the medical side of it. The financial side of it got really loose back in the early 2000s, and a lot of companies had come to realize that they had issued a lot of product and a lot of death benefit to people that really didn't justify the coverage. Once that's out there, though, and once an insurance company has issued that coverage, there's no taking it back. So they're stuck with that, but they've amended their ways. And I will tell you that financial underwriting for life insurance has gotten much more difficult, where, again, not on so much the smaller policies, but when you're talking about people that are buying over $3 million of coverage, $5, $10, $15 million of life insurance, and there are a lot of people that are buying large amounts of insurance for, again, state tax purposes, business purposes, etc., they're going to have to bring what we would call financial justification. And that could include things like tax returns. Certainly in a business, we want to look at profit and loss statements. We want to look at balance sheets. With individuals, we may ask for personal financial statements. They do credit checks, etc. But the industry has really tightened down on what they will offer to whom as it relates to amounts of insurance.
All right. Because, and the reason I brought that up is because you'll hear it or see it on TV or whatever the case might be, get $1 million of coverage for this if you're this. It's not that easy. It really isn't.
It can be.
If they're in perfect health, yeah.
If they're in good health, yeah. And if they have a need, it can go smoothly.
Right. Well, and I look at it in this regard because we're about the same age. I'm not in perfect health. I don't know about yours because I've not asked, but I know I've got stuff that's going to put me in a category that's going to cost me way more, or I might not even qualify. And that's why I look at it with that eye, because I go, hey, they can have these commercials all day long, but it's not just that easy for everybody.
Well, that's where your agent really comes in and plays an important role in this whole thing. So the radio ads or the online ads for you to purchase life insurance soon, quick and easy, is a bit of a fallacy, because I do believe that you need an agent to guide you through the process. Someone like an agent at the benefit companies that can help you navigate through that process. And by that I mean ask the relevant questions up front. Ask about health history. Ask about medications. Ask about what their intent is for the life insurance. Why are you buying $2 million of insurance? What's the purpose of it, etc.? So that the agent and a person like myself who's going to facilitate this process behind the scenes can set proper expectations. And where there's issues, we're going to bring those issues up right away so that we can address them, because at the end of the day, in this underwriting process, it's all going to get laid out on the table. So the sooner that we know this, the earlier that we're able to address what I'll call little hiccups in underwriting, the better off it is for everybody. For the client, for the agent, for the insurance companies, let's just get it all out on the table right away, set proper expectations so everybody knows what they're dealing with.
Fair enough. So thank you for indulging me on that, because I see those, I hear those commercials, I'm like, it's not just that easy for everybody.
It can be. It can be for some, and it's more difficult for others. And again, age and the amount of insurance that you're purchasing are going to be the two biggest factors in how high the hurdles are in getting insurance.
Understood. So We've talked about your process and a little bit about how the industry actually functions there. So if someone hasn't looked at a life insurance policy in a while and they want to have you take a look at it, what do they do? I mean, it's a phone call, but what do they need to do?
Well, if they have a relationship with an agent, I would, and it's a relationship, a trusting relationship that they feel like they can go back to, I would say, you know, reach out to your agent. Reach out to someone at the benefit companies. Or people are always more than welcome to reach out to me. My office, as you had stated, is in Elm Grove. I'm happy to talk to people over the phone. I'm happy to meet with them in person. I can be reached on my office line at 262-364-0700. And happy to engage someone in a conversation, whether it's to discuss product that they already have, what to do with it, how's it performing, or I think I should look at life insurance, and we can talk through the reasons why and what that process is to obtain it.
All right. Thanks, Marty. Appreciate all that, all your wealth of knowledge. That's awesome because, again, I have some experience here, but I don't have what you have. So thanks for being here and talking about that. So once again, to recap, find Marty at HighlandBrokerage.com or call him directly, 262-364-0700. Again, great that Marty's another partner of ours here at the benefit companies. And to find out more about the benefit companies, go to connectandsimplify.com, connectandsimplify.com, or just call me at 262-278-8522. Now, our goal here at the benefit companies, take those administrative tasks off your everyday plate, so you can focus on building your business. And in today's discussion, we're talking about not just business, but we're talking about individuals, and we do the same thing there. So thanks for listening today. We appreciate it. Be well.
I'm Kurt Otto for the benefit companies. Historically, economic downturns thinned the landscape of many businesses, while also providing strategic business investment and management opportunity for savvy business leadership. Over decades, benefit company professionals have walked side by side with many businesses, building bridges over economic pitfalls and ladders to greater level of success in times of increased economic pressure. We've seen it all, solved every business administration problem. Insourcing the benefit companies is full-time access to an in-house, knowledgeable consultant with a broad expertise and experience. No single business working alone has. Your insourced benefit company team keeps you plugged into changing rules and regulations. Right now, do you know possible strategic or financial advantages to modify employee benefits? Can you implement employee retention plans? How will legislation, including the SECURE Act, impact your company? Your benefit company's team knows will help avoid pitfalls and present portable plans, enhancing your competitive advantage. Connect and Simplify. Insource the benefit companies. ConnectandSimplify.com. Thank you.